The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Yes, it is time to add another book now to the Hard Shoulder bookshelf. Dermot Gavin, the gardener, regular on the Pat Kenny Show, he placed his favourite reads on that shelf last week. This week, it is the turn of David Gillick, of course, Olympian, European champion. We would have seen him most recently doing his bit in front of the camera with microphone in hand for RTE Trackside in Paris. David, it's great to talk to you. Listen, before we kind of go through favourite reads and what book you're putting up on the shelf, I mean, how was that experience in Paris?
Ah, look, it was amazing. Where do I start? First of all, an absolute privilege to be there and be in that position to engage and chat to the athletes as they come off the track and in some of their biggest kind of moments of their lives and careers. So, to be there and sample it all and just witness their heroics. And in fairness, they all spoke extremely well. And yeah, it's great because, I think when you go through the sport yourself and you get to a point where you retire and you move away from it, it's great to still have a part to play and a bit of a role in it all. And particularly with Paris, it was like the only show in town, you know. And it was great that people kind of got to get those insights from the athletes on the track as they come off and put a bit of context around their performance. You know, it's not always about medals. It's sometimes just getting to the start line, getting through rounds, and even say, for example, like Rashida coming fourth, you know, context around that performance was still an incredible achievement. And it's great that they, and in fairness to them all, they all spoke extremely well and gave us great insights into their journeys.
Did you work on Rio or Tokyo?
Yeah, I've actually done the last three Olympics. So from Rio to Tokyo and obviously Paris. So
because Tokyo is this kind of weird aberration where there was no fans, but also it was the middle of the night for everybody.
Big
here,
time.
Which makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
Paris was probably the biggest gig you've done in that regard.
Oh, definitely. And when you look at Paris, and a lot of people say Ireland's most successful, as it was for medals, but I also think the time zone played a pivotal role. Obviously been in Europe, so, you know, logistically people could come over and there's so many Irish that were there supporting. And just basically the fact that it was primetime TV for an awful lot of people. They come in from a busy day to turn it on and it was all in front of them. And I think the fact that say Mona McSherry got a medal early in the Olympics kind of gave momentum. It caught people's imagination. It creates stories. And then obviously the success of the team getting two rounds, creating stories. And it just kind of got more and more momentum. And then obviously for athletics to come in on week two, there were still plenty of stories. And, you know, that we had skin in the game all the way right to the last day, which is fantastic. And I think I do believe, you know, the fact of kind of, say, Irish sport with not a whole lot of GAA in August, I think that does give, it brings other sports to the fore and kind of it's not a whole competition. And I've seen this over the last couple of years, even the European Championships back in Munich 2 years ago. You know, the fact that there was no kind of other big shows taking place in August, athletics in that format really came to the fore. And I think this time around we really saw that with the Olympics.
How easily or otherwise has all the praise sat with you? I mean, people are falling over themselves to talk about how amazing David Gillick is.
I got to be honest, it's funny. I went for a run this morning and I came back into the house laughing and I was saying to my wife, Charlotte, Jesus, Charlotte, I think I'm a celebrity. People are going, oh, you were great. You know, I'm in the middle of a session and people are trying to talk to me. I'm like, come on, I'm on the watch here, you know. No, do you know what it is? It's very humbling. The messages and feedback is fantastic. And I kind of just say that if Roy Keane was to critique my performance, he'd be just saying, well, he was just doing his job, you know. And I think when you go into these things, you don't expect, you know, the outcome. And, you know, I don't even know what is actually going out on air. I'm there as a reporter. I'm trackside and, you know, I'm there with the camera person. We're getting as many interviews as we can, international athletes, Irish athletes. And I actually don't know what's been used. I'm not patched through to studio, so I don't really know. And it is a little bit overwhelming because I did the last three Olympics and for various reasons, maybe time zones and all the rest of it, maybe people didn't kind of maybe get an insight into what I was doing. So it's nice to know that people are on that journey. And I think when I was growing up, you know, you turn on RTE and you'd watch the Olympics and you would see kind of all the races and you would hear from the Irish athletes, but you might not necessarily hear from the international athletes. You might have to flick over to other channels. And, you know, my kind of role was like, well, let's just see how many athletes we can get. And I kind of had a little target with myself if I could just try and get the medal winners of all the events and just see what happens. Like, they're under no obligation to talk to you, but yet they still have to walk past you. So I would just try and kind of, you know, watch their body language as they come up through the mix zone. I'm in position 40, so that means there's 39 other broadcasters ahead of me. So it's a lot of talking, like, you know, so they may walk past you, they may stop and give you a word, you know, and that's all it takes. And I think for people back home to obviously listen to the commentary of the great names like Noah Lyles, etc., to then come off the track and hear from them, I think it brings people on that journey, and they're invested from the first round all the way through to the final. And I think it creates the buzz for everyone, you know.
Yeah, no, listen, you did a fantastic job, and I think I speak for everyone saying that. It's fitting then, when we get onto the book choice, yeah, that there's a kind of a sporting theme to yeah, the choices. So what's the main book? What is the first book we're picking? The book that's kind of going up on the Hard Shoulder bookshelf?
Well, I'll probably give you the one I'm actually reading right now, and that's The Racket, Conan Island. That's what I'm reading right now, and I'm only a couple of chapters into it, but I'm already kind of hooked, because I suppose, like, look, it's fairly obvious I'm into my sport and stuff like that, and I find those books quite easy to read, you know, and it's probably a lot of the stuff kind of resonates as well. But that so far is going well. I'm enjoying that.
It's a brilliant, brilliant book. I'm actually holding my copy in my hand here. I finished it not too long ago. And what I loved about it is, I know we're going to talk about Andre Agassi in a moment as well, yeah, but, you know, his experience kind of growing up in the game would have been completely different, because he would have been kind of marked out for greatness very early on. Whereas Conor Nylund's, it's just, and it's written like the subheading tells you the kind of the theme of the book: on tour with tennis golden generation and the other 99%. And it's very much focused on that other 99%. God, it is a grueling life at times, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. And that's the thing, like, I'm only kind of getting into it, and already you're kind of going, what, like, such a journey, you know, and picking yourself up and trying to go again, like that. We talk about resilience, like, and even from a young age, kind of like the expectation that was put on him, you know, locally, you know, parents, like, you're a parent, I'm a parent, and, you know, kids involved in sport, you're kind of reading it going, God, like, what would I do with my kids, you know? And even that kind of, like, the harsh reality of making those decisions, you know, like, leaving home, travelling at a young age, you know, trying to find a way, and then literally coming up, you know, and watching some of these big superstars who you have beaten, and then suddenly they're going on to, like, you know, top 10 in the world, and you're kind of questioning, well, when am I going to get my break, you know? And just the names in it as well is quite fascinating. I wouldn't have, like, followed a whole lot of tennis. I wouldn't have known a whole lot of Conor's journey, but, like, the names that he's crossing paths with and hitting balls with is just, it's amazing, like, you know? And that's the thing where you're kind of looking at it going, like, you know what, like, he was mixing with all these people who went on to great things, and, you know, it is really important to get the insides of people who maybe didn't get to that level, you know, because the reality of life, the reality of sport is that so many people try and an awful lot just don't make it for whatever reason.
Yeah, I know. Listen, it's a fascinating book. I'd strongly recommend it. Conor Nylund's The Racket. Let's talk about Agassi then.
I'm laughing to myself here because I'm like, God, two tennis books.
Yeah, exactly. So people would be like, God, yeah, I didn't know he was so into tennis, David Gillick.
I'm not. that's a funny thing with sports. Sometimes it's just the whole competitive nature and the story that grabs you, you know. And even coming back from the Olympics, like, you know, I didn't see a whole lot of other sports, but there's plenty of stories, and, you know, those are the things that kind of grab me. And, like, Agassi, you know, that was one book that, like, I couldn't put down. I was like, oh my God, like, give me more, give me more, give me more. And again, that fascination around the journey and like, obviously the fact that he hated tennis, and you're kind of going, well, you couldn't have hated tennis, you know, you were so good at it, you must have loved it. But that monotony of, like, of just hitting the ball, like the dragon, without giving too much away if people haven't read it, but the dragon that he refers to, like the machine that just keeps spitting the ball at him, keeps spitting the ball, and he's just, like, nonstop hitting it back every single day. He doesn't sell tennis, let's be honest, but the reality of what it takes, you know, that mastery that's required, and, you know, obviously the people around him and the role his dad, his family had in it as well, is it's just extremely fascinating. And you're talking about, like, arguably one of the best ever tennis players, you know, and he didn't like it.
Yeah. I know it's amazing. And from the very start, when he's in the shower, you know, before, is it the US Open? Is it his final? Is he in France? Anyway, it's that kind of towards the end of his career, and just his description of dreading the day in front of him, you know, having to play. And it's a funny kind of juxtaposition with Conor Nylund's, because you kind of read, and you're only a few chapters in, we won't give too much away.
Yeah.
But Nylund's, you kind of get to points where you're like, what are you still going on for? What are you doing? Like, and he has this unbelievable drive to keep going. Agassi's almost the opposite. Like, you're kind of thinking at him like, why are you talking about giving up? You've got Grand Slams kind of falling at your feet.
But we always talk about this in sport. It's like, you know, you compare different people and go, well, if he had a bit of what that other person has and vice versa, God, what would they be like? You know, and I think, you know, obviously Agassi was phenomenal, world class, but you're kind of looking at like, God, like, you know, if Conor maybe had a little bit of what Agassi had and he had that drive and that will to succeed, you know, what would have happened? You know, that sport, that's like individual. And even like, you know, as a parent now and bringing my own kids through sport, you kind of, you look at other kids and you go, God, like if he had a bit of this or a bit of that, you know what I mean? It's fascinating when you're kind of at that level and you're just reading and hearing these stories about these athletes that you put on the pedestal.
Yeah. Well, listen, you've got a type, because honourable mention, I think, is another sporting autobiography, is it?
My last one, what was it? I said...
Paul McGrath.
Oh, again, I have to be honest now, it was probably, I'd say it was about 15 years ago or even more since I read the book, you know. But again, just an eye-opening story of... And we talk about talent. Like, this guy was so, so good playing at the top level. And like, you know, he didn't train. Like, that's just the mad thing is, like, the managers. And also goes back to kind of like, you know, how you sometimes, you manage that individual. Granted, it's a team sport, but managing that individual. And I think in my sport, athletics, you kind of, from a coaching perspective, you always talk about, okay, you know, coaching the individual and then coaching the event. And it was just amazing, like, how all the managers that Paul McGrath had, they understood how vital he was to a team, but also the complexity of his nature and trying to manage that. And obviously, you know, it's very open book. He goes into the dark places and, you know, how tough things got. But, you know, what a talent he was, and just kind of what was going on behind the scenes. Stuff that, like, you probably would have never even thought, when the crowds go and they watch Paul McGrath. And even, like, in my mind, I go back to, like, USA 94 against Roberto Baggio and the Italians. Like, what an outstanding performance he put in. But, like, we didn't know what was going on. We didn't know how, you know, the various people, like, in that team, Jack Charlton, had to manage him on an individual level to get that performance out of him. And, you know, the book is just eye-opening in terms of his own journey.
So, remind me, what book then are we placing is coming out on top of the three of them? What book is going on the bookshelf?
Ah, you got to go Paul McGrath.
All right, okay, we'll stick Paul McGrath. Why not? What a legend. Paul McGrath, his autobiography, up on the Hard Shoulder bookshelf. Honourable mention to open Andre Agassi's autobiography. It is brilliant. And David currently reading The Racket, on tour with Tennis's Golden Generation and The Other 99% by Conor Nylund. I've just recently finished it myself. It is brilliant. Highly recommend it. David, it's been a real pleasure. Thanks a million.
Thanks for having me on.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.